Christian Muller here, and I'm joined by Naomi Andrews, who is running for representative of District 1 in the U.S. Congress, and you're looking to take Carol Shea Porter's seat. Now, you actually have a special connection to Carol Shea. Can you explain that?
Yes, good morning. I'm so glad to be here. So my name is Naomi Andrews, running for Congress. I've worked for Carol Shea Porter as her chief of staff and her campaign manager for those two winning comeback campaigns. So I've been with her for 11 and a half years. So I've really been living and breathing the issues of the First District. I grew up here. I grew up in Epping, but came up to North Conway a lot. This is where my family vacationed. My dad and I have hiked all 4,000 foot mountains. So New Hampshire's my home, and I've been proud to work for the people of the First District for close to a dozen years, and I hope to continue that work.
Now, do you think your work with Carol Shea kind of gives you an advantage over some of your opponents?
Yes, absolutely. No one knows this district the way I do. No one has the personal relationships in every single town and community that I've built up over 11 and a half years of working for the people of this district. So yes, I believe it does.
Now, what differentiates you from your opponents in the Democratic primary?
You know, I'm happy to say that there's not a lot of room between us on the issues, so we're amplifying the message. But what really sets me apart is the experience. And so we've built up a reputation over the past decade or so that people know us, they trust us, they know we're honest and hardworking. And even though they don't always agree with us, this is a tough district. So President Trump won this district in 2016, and Carol and I won this district. But they voted for us because they know where we stand on the issues. Also, our reputation with constituent services. It's really important. It's something we've always prioritized. Anyone that comes to our office or calls our office is going to be treated with dignity and respect, and we're going to do everything we can to advocate on their behalf. Now, I legally had to quit my job working for the Congresswoman in order to run for Congress, but I have worked for her for 11 and a half years, so sometimes I will still say we or our, because I helped hire everyone in that office. That's the team we put together. But that constituent service work has been really important. I can't tell you how many Republican leaders in this district had my congressional cell phone and would call me and say, Naomi, we're sending someone to your office because we know that you'll go above and beyond for them.
Now, what do you believe the role of the U.S. House of Representatives is?
Well, we have three co-equal branches of government, and I believe that Congress has a constitutional duty of oversight over the executive branch. I believe the current Congress has abdicated that constitutional duty, and I really want to see more members of Congress elected in November, myself included, that will put a check on the current administration and really play out that role of constitutional duty of oversight.
Speaking of the Constitution, as defined by it, the House is in control of taxes and federal spending. How do you think the current Congress is doing in that role, and what would you do to change it?
We have the power of the purse, and I do not support the direction that they've gone in. The tax bill of last year is triggering $1.7 trillion additional deficit. It's triggering automatic cuts to Medicare. Joe Biden said, show me your budget, I'll tell you your values. I don't believe that their budget or their tax bill is reflective of the values of the American people or the people of the First District. I'll tell you one story. Our office tried to introduce an amendment to that tax bill to allow teachers to deduct a small amount of what they pay out of pocket. We know teachers, especially elementary school teachers, they're paying something between $500 and $1,000 to bring supplies into their classrooms. So we said, let's allow teachers to deduct $250 out of that. And the House Republicans said, no, that's too expensive. But if you have a private jet, you have a private yacht, you can keep your deduction. But the teachers, no. Now, the Senate did save that deduction, but the House Republicans said, no, that was too expensive. So a few years back, Senator Coburn in 2011 published a pamphlet called Subsidies of the Rich and Famous, and it's only gotten worse, the amount of money that we middle class pay and give subsidies to the wealthiest in this country. And I don't think that's where our priorities should lie. I think that we need a robust middle class, and that we should do best by the middle class in our country, and as well as help the poor.
You mentioned the middle class, and a big issue that a lot of middle class people are working for, mostly employers, is the lack of skilled workers. Is there a way that you see you could solve that in Congress?
So I traveled around this district with the Congresswoman. We went to a lot of different companies, and there are some great jobs here in New Hampshire. And I had conversations with the HR people on these tours and with the owners. And I would ask, what is your biggest challenge? And what I heard time and time again was the skilled labor we need for these specific jobs. And so then I would ask, well, tell me about your partnerships with either the universities or even the high schools. And way too often I would get blank stares. And that was cause for concern, especially when we know so many young people that are graduating from our colleges and universities here in New Hampshire are leaving the state. So if we have these professional jobs here in the state, what I want to see is federal response to bring together these partnerships between these great companies that are here in state and our young people who are graduating from high school and college, and make sure those partnerships happen and that they get hired here in New Hampshire.
Now, you mentioned higher education, a big issue for yourself, according to your website, myself, and pretty much everybody within our age range, is student debt. How do you believe the Congress should handle that?
It is unsustainable as it is now. I've hired a lot of people over the years, and I've been watching the numbers grow and grow. And so the student loan debt is staggering. I've seen young people come into our office with $200,000 worth of student loan debt. And that's not only a burden for the student, but also the parents. And so we wonder why young people aren't buying homes. We wonder why young people aren't starting businesses. When you're looking at $100,000 or $200,000 of student loan debt, they can't do it. I myself have student loan debt. I understand. So what I want to see is debt-free college for public institutions, whether you're a two-year or four-year public institution. I know that we can do it at the federal level to be debt-free. So we can do that by work-study programs, by increasing Pell Grants. You know, one of the first bills that we introduced and passed in 2007 when we arrived in Congress was to increase the amount of money for Pell Grants. The very first thing that Republicans did when they got control of the House in 2010 was cut Pell Grants. You know, we have to invest in our future generations. I know that education is the key to prosperity. And so having these young people come out with this burdensome student loan debt is not the way to go. Let's invest in our future generations. They can still have skin in the game. I did work study. You know, work study can be a part of it. You can pay into it, but not come out with that staggering student loan debt.
Mm. A big issue that is all over the news as of late is the Second Amendment and gun control. Where do you stand on that issue?
I'm a proud Moms Demand Action candidate of distinction. It's really important to me that we have conversations about how to make it so that mass school shootings are not the norm. I was so upset when that young girl in Santa Fe said that she wasn't surprised that that happened at her school. You know, Columbine happened when I was a senior in high school, and I knew how terrible that was, and that stuck with me, and I organized my entire school to sign a card to send to Columbine to say that we were with them, and who knew that we would come out this many years later, and it like I said, it's almost the norm. So we know that people, the vast majority of people believe that there is some common sense gun reform that we can do. One example, if I told you you were going to the airport tomorrow and you were in line and I said only one out of the four of you needs to go through the metal detector, you would say, that's not fair. Well, that's how our background system works right now. So we know people support universal background checks. I grew up in Epping. A lot of my friends were hunters. They still hunt. They rely on that venison to get through the winter. But I've had conversations with them, and they say, magazine capacity limits are okay. If I'm out in the woods and I can't shoot a deer in 10 rounds, I probably shouldn't be out there. So that's another common sense reform. A waiting period. You know, we also know that suicide is a huge issue in our country and that it's so often impulsive. So if you have that short waiting period, we could also get a hold of the suicide epidemic in our country.
On your website, you state that you support allowing people of any age to buy into Medicare. How would you propose funding and managing that?
So we've been talking about this since the very beginning. Carol ran her first campaign talking about allowing people to buy into Medicare. And so we knew that the ACA was not a perfect bill. It was getting the train out of the station, that there was enough in it that made it worth passing, that you couldn't be denied because of pre-existing conditions, that there were no more lifetime caps. But we said, you know, we were really upset when they took out the public option. Let's come back. Let's make it better in the future. But you know that in the interim, we've had 8 years of Republican-led majority that has only voted to repeal it over 60 times. But I believe that the next step is allowing people to buy into, opt into Medicare. So the way our bill is written would actually allow people to buy into it at cost. So any age can buy into it, and that would create that competition with the private insurance companies to finally get a control over the skyrocketing costs of premiums and deductibles. People know Medicare. They trust it. Their mom's on it. Their grandmother's on it. They're on it. It's a program that's trusted and well-known, and there can always be improvements, but I think that's the next step to get more people covered at an affordable cost in our country.
Many Americans see a growing rift in politics today, whether it be the left or the right. Do you believe that there is a rift? And if so, do you think there's a way to repair it?
These are tough times, but I want to let you know that earlier this year, there was an analysis of all the members of Congress to say who was the most bipartisan, and our office actually came out on top. So any opportunity that there's been to reach across the aisle and work on issues that are important to us without compromising our values, we have done that, and I will continue to do that. I have those personal relationships in Congress as well. As the chief of staff, I'm the person in the room with the member. So those Republican members of Congress know who I am and know that they can trust me to work on issues where we can find common ground. Something that's very important to me and to the Congresswoman is privacy issues. So we worked with the very conservative member of Congress, Justin Amash, on privacy issues. A lot of issues impacting our military men and women, our veterans, those are other areas where we've successfully worked across the aisle. So that's something that's been very important to me and will continue being very important to me.
All right. Now, this is probably the most important to our listeners. What's your favorite mountain to hike?
Oh, my. That's so tough. So I have hiked all 48 4,000-foot mountains. But, you know, Mount Washington is just always so special. No matter how many times you go up, it's just got a very special place in my heart. I've been up every single route, including Huntington's. And so no matter how many times I do it, it's just, like I said, a special place in my heart.
All right. Well, thank you for coming in and giving us some of your time.
Thank you so much. Take care.